Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and this is the Dr. Denise Show. This is the Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond series, and I feel incredibly grateful to have Paul Sheasley back. He is a mental health practitioner of some high-powered professionals, diplomats, politicians, and celebrities in Washington, D.C. and Maryland. I've been fortunate to have him on twice. We've talked about high-powered stress. We also had some time together, you know, really taking a moment of pause, you know, during the start of the war, you know, on Ukraine. And Paul, I just want to say thank you for coming back on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back. I'm looking forward to today.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, I always like to tune in before I have a guest and I look at like what's going on in my life, and you and I just spoke briefly. I think doing a high-powered stress part two, and even just looking at the magnitude of what does that even mean, high-powered stress. So do you want to start or should I? I mean, we have so much that we can talk about.
Yeah, just kind of thinking about our, I guess we'll call it our part one series of, you know, high-powered stress. You know, as you and I had dialogued a little earlier before today's show is, you know, working in high-powered stress and thinking about even ourselves as practitioners, you know, mentioning that about the degree of stress that we face, which is so unique in working with individuals that are, you know, that are high net worth or high powered as we have been dialoguing. And so I thought that was an interesting comment and concept that you had brought up, because when I think about it, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, we too are under that level of stress as well, and working and not just with high powered people, but just in the, you know, what we do, it's just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to say with like gratitude, one of the reasons why I love managing my own show and my practice is because you never know what a day is going to be like. You know, I can have a session, and I think a lot of people can relate, whether they're running a company, they're an athlete, they're a star. You don't know if you're going to have an injury. You don't know if it's a 911 day for any of us. And so I have to tell you that when I go from like one appointment to the next, sometimes there can be days with more emergencies. And I am such a high level empath. I had reached out to you before we just did the show to say I'm dealing with something that's kind of an emergency, not kind of an emergency, and I'm wrapping up.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that that is a tool, everyone. If you are going to a meeting or going to a session, just stating your mental health or your state of mind going into it allows you to take the pressure off. And so Paul was kind enough to say, Denise, you know, we can do this show another time. And then I checked in with myself and just did a deep breath. I'm very, very much care so much about my clients. Actually, really, I can say this, I've been in practice, I really send love to my patients and the people that I work with and the people I know. And so I just think that my own practice of mindfulness, walking in the door, I just did a house call. I've done some house calls during the pandemic because we still have to wear masks in doctor's offices. So I've figured out ways to meet people outside or in different situations. And I did, and I want to hear my own way of dealing with stress just now was taking a deep breath, grabbing some water. And then I asked myself the question, do you think you should do a show right now? And I thought, yes, do a show. Plus, I thought, I love hearing Paul's voice, even though we're not colleagues in the same town. I'm like, it sounds so comforting to hear your voice. And then I said, why don't we just be a little vulnerable about that? We have days where we're feeling a lot of stress, and how do we handle that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the power of relationships, it's so sometimes taken for granted. I was thinking about a colleague today that just stopped by my office just to say hi. And, you know, it's interesting for me to like switch my professional brain to my vulnerable brain and to be able to be like, hi back. And, you know, this is what's going on for me. And to be able to have that announcement, it's cathartic and super important. And when you said that, you know, Denise, you're talking about, you know, just having the opportunity to take the pressure off by just announcing. I feel that, and you felt that too. And that is super important, I think, for everyone to acknowledge that it doesn't all have to take place in our heads, that we surround ourselves with people who are important for a reason. And, you know, those folks are here to hear us and to be empathetic, and just as we do in return for them, and not to forget about those who have that power over us to help us realign, you know, when we're having a tough day or tough week or a tough month or even a tough year.
You know, what's interesting is I'm thinking back to maybe 20 years ago, the Dr. Denise at that age frame, might have just not even told you. I might have just done the show and acted like this professional that didn't have to say I was just in an emergency. And so I think that's part of, I would say, my own growth, but my own kind of really walking the walk of mindful awareness. One of the biggest things and gifts we can give to ourselves in any situation of stress or feeling state is name it to claim it. When you name the situation, the feeling state, the moment, like we just said, that takes off the physiologic pressure. It's cognitive reframing. It's a form of there's dialectical behavioral training. So I don't think I was as evolved as I know for sure we're always growing, hopefully, but the old me might have been a Wonder Woman and just powered through it instead of having this grace for myself. And I was even thinking as I was turning into my complex, like my mind, I care so much, you know, so you have to then create a situation where you almost like create peace in the next moment. So you don't take the energy of that stress onto this moment. I think we can talk about examples and how you've helped clients, but I think this is such a real life situation that we all face.
Yes. And it's learned too, to keep that to ourselves. And in part, when I work with high profile individuals, one of the dialogues that we have is that you are allowed to tell people how you feel, and you are allowed to tell even those who are close to you how you're feeling. You don't have to carry the load all by yourself. And I think that comes with, you know, again, some of their personality types and just the design of their success and what they believe is their script for success is that I've got to manage my problems. You know, I don't need help. I can do this. And what these feelings are they're going to get in the way, or they're going to potentially even be used against me and or show a sign of weakness. And helping people to, even through the therapeutic dialogue, feel comfortable there and to generalize that to other relationships is super rewarding. And I just get really excited when they come back and they start to say, you know, I opened up to my partner. I opened up to my partnership in terms of professional or a colleague. And they're learning that, you know, they're not superhuman. And it really gives them a benefit to then be able to process what's really going on and to even avoid unhealthy coping, like these unhealthy behaviors that often take place too, because there's no other outlet. So that's definitely something that's come to mind, and definitely a piece of the therapy that I do with folks is helping them to trust that they can be open and allow others in and allow others to be sympathetic and empathetic so that their needs of connection are met and that they can feel supported or protected by others. They're not alone.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking of just the situation I just went through. But I think in many times, I find when people are going to call upon a therapist, a psychiatrist, their spiritual leader, when you start to come to a place of awareness that the more you have that authentic self-love, you're able to reach out and maybe learn that it's okay. But I also, what came to mind, Paul, when you were speaking, is know your audience. I think that if you're in a situation where you're in the public eye or you are doing something, you have to figure out who's in your inner circle. I think a lot of times people, when they're in a celebrity situation or you're dealing with politicians, and I'm in the, you know, Southern Cal Hollywood industry, and also treated professional athletes and different people, you know, you sometimes the way the media works is the way society, I don't want to call it the media, human beings, I'm hardwired that I want to see other people win. A lot of what happens in kind of the grotesque part of humanity is a lot of things are based on what's going wrong in the world instead of what's going right. So if you're in a position of power or status or celebrity status, sometimes I think a lot of people want to see you fail. So I think there's also this protective mechanism. And maybe I would love for you to weigh in on cancel culture and what that's like, how maybe you can see from the work you've done and I can see from the work I've done that maybe it's not easy for some people to go seek help.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the mentality, it's almost as if the success is the baseline. Everybody sees this, right? That's the static that everyone is aware of. Oh, they're successful. They have this or they have that. And, you know, they have this influence. And what people do is, I mean, what I have been told by, you know, many of these individuals in their perspective is that one particular person said, well, I feel like people get bored of our success. And so they look deeper and they look for things in at this person, my life, to extract for something new. And this person had talked about, you know, doing all of these charitable events and being, you know, present during any like disaster reliefs and so on, and just being a part of the community. And this person's like, you know what, I do get recognition for these things, but you know, it only takes a slip of the mouth or an association that then becomes the hot commodity of their lives. And the secrecy of what they do And the vigilance of which they have to put forward is exhausting. And unfortunately, as you kind of mentioned, is that sometimes we can be unforgiving, you know? And I think, you know, it's an interesting kind of dynamic with us in the media, for example, is that we can be very much unforgiving when looking at celebrities and such. Like we have currently Johnny Depp here in Virginia on, you know, doing testimonies over the last several of days regarding a defamation lawsuit, et cetera. And, you know, it is now the focal point of his life. It's just, you know, a lot of people, if they didn't know who he was, which is very far and few, they know him now for this. And so it is hard to walk away from some of these spotlighted, I guess, marks, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And you and I probably have helped people through that. So I want to be respectful of the different shows we've already done together. I think we can do the talking stick and I can pass it to you more if we want to weigh in on how people, I think we did in the first show, talk a little bit about cancel culture. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
And we talked about people having greater trust in family and friends and seeking professional help, holistic health. So we can put the link to that show. One thing that we haven't done yet, I think a lot of people who are in positions of leadership or doing well, I think that the power of language and almost like mainstay media or how we perceive words, that there's words, you know, in order to be a strong leader or strong, a lot of times people have to have levels of healthy narcissism versus different narcissism. Healthy narcissism saves the day, but I think there's almost like a misunderstanding. Let's do some myth busting on narcissism. Let's do that. I think that might be interesting.
That's great.
Narcissism myth busting. Go.
I love it.
Go, Paul.
I love it. And oh my gosh, it's so fresh on the mind. I did a training for several dozen attorneys for narcissism in law and clientele. And I love educating and about the, you know, the term narcissism. And part of that conversation was that it's a buzzword these days, and it's a very powerful word.
Yes, thank you for saying that. That's what I was looking for. There seems to be like popular sexy words of the month that we can tend to like use, and maybe we have to, we're going to unpack the shades of gray of what narcissism looks like.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of our language, it's like a shortcut, you know, because what most people are trying to do is they're trying to describe like a variety of people that we find to be like offensive or maybe difficult or non-compliant. And that's really what we're describing. But we use this concept of narcissism, and it's actually inaccurately and incorrectly used, because true narcissism is, it's actually quite rare, right? If we look at the, you know, we look at the percentages and the statistics, it's actually quite low. And we can only truly diagnose it by a qualified provider, clinician, and most people are not. Now, we do have Google, right? And, you know, but I always am weary of that. Just like I tell everybody, you have a cold, right? And you Google search something and you've got every symptom of that. I've got to have that. And it's kind of the same with like narcissism. You could Google narcissism and you're at all of these traits.
You know what? I'm going to have you unpack the characteristics of it, but actually on my other series that sort of fell back into my lap, I brought back Rocking a Betrayal because a publicist reached out to me. Donna Anderson is the author of 8 different books, and her most recent book is about senior sociopaths, myth busting. And so I will, she's going to be on for a 4th show, and they think that up to 12, anywhere from 5 to 12% of people could have sociopath tendencies. And she collected data from tens of thousands, but we're talking about, you know, the absolute narcissist versus traits. So we're talking about the shades of gray. So when you were teaching the attorneys about different types of like what to look for with narcissism, when you and I were in training, I don't want to make assumptions. I'll just tell you, we were taught that there's healthy narcissism. And so so then you have to say, well, what's self-esteem? What's self-love? Mm-hmm. How much do I give myself credit for something versus did I go too far? And also, like, let's say you don't have a publicist, and because I had a publicist way at the beginning, but you're just being an influencer and you're pitching. And people might perceive that you're, wow, she's sure full of herself today.
Right.
So like, I think people get confused, like how much am I supposed to have healthy self-esteem versus am I being narcissistic? When to have a mindful pause in conversation? Kimmy Seltzer and I just did a show called The Monologuer, which I'll tell you, but why don't I first let you just give us some tips on what you spoke about with the attorneys. I'd love to hear it.
So narcissism is on the spectrum. There's a spectrum, right? And, you know, when you talk about that healthy narcissism, you know, those are the abilities for us to, like, you know, we see ourselves a bit special, right? And there's a degree of assertiveness, there's a degree of confidence, and that allows us the motivation, really the courage to take risks, right? And to put ourselves out there and to look at challenges with full acceptance. And, you know, that when I think about the positive, the healthy narcissism, that's kind of the definition that comes to mind. And so then there's this more problematic side, right? The more pathological, where there's that arrogance and the grandiosity, and, you know, it's interfering really with this person's ability to like function daily. It's a enduring pattern of this unhealthy, dysfunctional relationship that they have, or they're perceived that they have with others and the world around them. And so, those are really, that's kind of, that's the spectrum piece that, I described to in my training is that there's this unhealthy, and then there's this the healthy, and then there's this unhealthy piece that's very different from each other.
So just for fun, because I like to geek out and I'm listening to you, I just looked up this is in Psych Central, narcissistic personality disorder versus normal narcissism. So I just need to say, in Greek mythology, Narcissus mm-hmm. was a proud young man who fell in love with his own reflection in a pool of water. He was so enchanted by his image that he couldn't leave it, so he starved to death. Now, if he had just looked into the pool, as many of us do when we check the mirror as we go out the door, and said to himself, looking good, dude, and moved on, he would have been okay. So, mm-hmm. and then it was just being tongue-in-cheek, like that quick check in the mirror is normal and healthy, feeling good about yourself, and talking about mm-hmm. you. But that isn't pathological. So then there's the other part, that's just positive self-esteem. And so Will Rogers, I guess, I'm going to put the link, this is fun, says, if it ain't bragging, if it's true. So I think though, oh my God. So I guess the other different definition of extreme is that when you think you're like especially attractive most of the time, whether they deserve it or not, you know, there's 6.2% of the population that have it. But you know, Paul, what's coming to mind for you and I, because we just deal with this, is I think mm-hmm. that level of compassion and empathy towards others, I think when there's a missing sensitivity chip, of mm-hmm. an awareness for someone else's perspective.
That's correct.
That's a big part of the narcissism. But then I have to say, as a child psychiatrist, I'm an adult and child psychiatrist, there's some people that are on the spectrum of the autism spectrum or Asperger's. And sometimes mm-hmm. those people could be misinterpreted from being narcissistic because they're just missing social cues. So I like to really unpack things. And this is why when you and I just heard the word narcissism and people just throw it out there, there's so many shades of gray. And that's why I like the word neurostyle that we all process and perceive. There's so much each person, you know, you could see you like Kimmy Seltzer and I on the show, the Diva Discussions, were laughing. You know, she said she's done monologues before. I've done monologues. So if you just did a window into one Paul Sheasley moment and flash, have you ever had a time if maybe someone only heard one part of what you did, they could have been quick to judge you?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting. I wonder if you're familiar with that term. Immediacy is like teaching people to, when they hear something that lands on their ears that doesn't feel good, to be able to speak up and say, you know, what you just said is what I'm picking up. And is this how I understand what you're trying to convey to me? And it happens all the time in therapy because I encourage that dialogue with my clients to say, you know, this is a place where you can talk to me and say, hey, what you just said, I didn't like that. So that then we can have an empathic conversation. Most what I find though outside of the session though is that people struggle with that and they hold on to their interpretations of maybe something that I've said or something someone else has said, and they carry it with them. They carry it like an extra baggage. We've got enough baggage these days. And so, you know, I guess to generalize that is for those listeners is that if, you know, just if somebody says something or you're in conversation or you're feeling something because of what somebody is saying to you or giving feedback, you know, practice that muscle of assertiveness and say, you know, I that didn't feel very, that didn't feel right. There's something off about what you just said. Could you say it again? And, it's super important, especially when I do my couples work.
Absolutely.
That's another piece. Yeah.
Well, we also come to any human interaction with all of our own past human experience. Maybe we've had like a betrayal or a misunderstanding, or we're having mm-hmm. a tough day. So that's why the mindfulness of like knowing that the only moment we have is right now and being as aware as we each can be with our own feelings helps us to have better communication. And I think what we went from high powered stress, being vulnerable, to then the buzzwords of narcissism healthy and unhealthy. But now what I'm hearing is, well, what's the tool for that? And the tool is being in the moment of now and having like a to and fro clarification, not making assumptions, I think is another important tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back into the work that I do with folks is being mindful, paying attention to emotions. And it's actually kind of easy because we're usually more aware of what we're feeling than what we're thinking. And if we practice tuning into our emotion, especially anger usually floats to the top very quickly. Most people rather be angry than sad or disappointed or let down. To learn, you know, about one's anger. What is this anger? Oh, I'm feeling angry. What does this mean? Where did it come from? Where's the source? And to practice, that's super important because, you know, when we're in a conversation with someone, as I'm talking about, it could be a long process. It sounds lengthy. But just paying attention to our feelings, oh, that person's really making me frustrated. I'm feeling frustrated. And then having a dialogue or a process to say, well, wait a minute, give me a moment to think about what you just said is perfectly acceptable. And sometimes out of politeness, we don't want to do that. We just want to comply or just let it happen.
You know, I love this. This is like a really great tip and tool because some people's neurostyle is that they can immediately on the spot articulate their feeling state. And then sometimes mm-hmm. we get told something or something happens and it's almost like people can go into almost like a trauma trigger and they might need to use the phrase, oh my goodness, I need to think about that. I can answer that like in an hour or two. It's not because I want to be disrespectful, but I really want to be thoughtful in my response. So I think sometimes having thoughtful transitional communication styles really allows a closer relationship, whether it's in business, personal, or in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that is something that folks, I think you have to practice finding comfort in. Especially if it's hard to be assertive and to say, you know, I need to get back to you, or I need to process this. You know, I can't confirm right now what you're asking of me. But I think if the person practices it and becomes more aware, it becomes just more of their daily and then more of the go-to when they talk to anyone. And I think that will could alleviate a lot of unnecessary stress, especially when communicating with other people.
I just thought of sort of a cheeky thing to ask you, but if I put you on the hot seat and it's too much, would you let me know?
Yes.
Okay. So how do you help people, whether it's in a couple situation or an individual therapy, to almost realize that they're being entitled if they don't realize that they are?
So that's, how do I do? I have to think of an example because it is situational. And we talked a little bit about this, as I mentioned, the difference between narcissism and pure entitlement.
Correct.
Is, you know, that expectation of it's like entitlement is the lack of consideration of others and the expectation that there are no limits for me. I'm special, or what do you mean limits? Like, why do they exist? Why do I have to follow these rules? Kind of definition, if you will. And so what I do is I recognize that and I go, oh, that's an interesting thing you just said. Could you repeat that? And sometimes they have to say it again because they need to now hear it. They've heard me say it. And we have this message in front of us that we look at together. And I go, oh gosh, I wonder how your business partner or your employee or your wife or your kid might look at that message when you say that to them. And helping them to take a step back from that message and to enter into more of like a healthy adult mode to look at it and go, you know, wow, I can really see why my son called me an asshole, because that right. message just seems so entitled. And they, yes, exactly. So it's slowing it down and just letting them be natural and then helping them see it.
Oh my goodness. This is what we talked about pre-show. This is like our pre-game. Even the word high-powered stress, like part two or narcissism, that makes me laugh because in a way, you know, we're all human beings. And yes, you know, some of us have MDs or we're attorneys or professional athletes, diplomats. But to me, you know, there's so many people that are like the heroes, the everyday heroes that are on the front lines, that have been on the front lines during the pandemic, or the people that are greeting people when they're getting, you know, they're escaping Ukraine and they're providing food, shelter, clothing, and helping others. So I feel like as human beings, we have these status, which do exist, right? We have the word celebrity, we have professional athletes, we have different titles, but then we all have to have that humility that we're all having a human experience. So even like, it's almost like, ha, 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 ha. Why do you guys even have to talk about high powered stress? Don't we all have stress? Right. So I just, I'm just being tongue in cheek because society's made these different terms or dimensions. Yeah. And I know I'm on Earth. I know people have celebrity status and, you know, you can call it high powered stress, but some people just making their, like delivering the mail during the entire pandemic and being the heroes that, or the people that are, had been working at the grocery stores, like risking their lives, you know? And so I think that kind of humility of not getting so full of yourself, no matter who you are in the world.
Exactly. Yes. That is humility and, that appreciation. And sometimes that's easy for some folks, and for others, it's lost. They once had it, right? Because that I've seen that happen as well, where there was this humility and then it just kind of faded away for one reason or another. And then sometimes it's a matter of teaching people because, you know, we learn that skill, that task comes from our early caregivers. And sometimes that environment, especially for those who have a sense of entitlement, that wasn't passed along. That's not their internal narrative. And so, you know, for myself, I like to look at my presence in the therapy room as sometimes a limited reparenter, like a parent, to reteach a narrative. And that I found to be super, just really helpful and helping to enhance that healthy sense of the self and that healthy adult voice, especially when it comes to relationships.
No, absolutely. So I know we covered a lot today. Is there anything that you feel that's been on your mind lately or in this year that you really wanted to address? I know you've shared some great articles recently at Psychiatric Times. I just want to honor, you know, I it's such a treat. I look at this time I'm spending with you and any of my guests as like reverence, like good old fashioned, yay, I get to talk to Paul. So is there anything that you wanted, Elsa, you wanted to talk about today?
My message, and it is a personal, it's always a personal task, is self-care. And it's just super important. And, you know, I take on that defeat of other people sometimes when I hear someone say, what self-care? I can't take care of my, you know, I've got other things that need to come before me. And it breaks my heart. And, you know, through example, you know, we have to demonstrate and show people that, you know, you're important as a person, you're important, and you have to put yourself first, even in the smallest of ways, whether it's a cup of coffee first thing in the morning by yourself or taking vacations or expanding upon a hobby. It's self-care is just super important, and it needs to be a part of the lifestyle. And I always love that. I emphasize that so much.
Paul Sheasley, did you know, I'm just being playful now. by the way, I love saying people's last names. One of my friends are like, why do you add people's net last names? I'm like, it just makes me so happy because I'm like Paul Sheasley. So I just want to say that was one of the, like for fun, like what do I want to throw down for 2022? And one of them was self-care is the new cool.
Yeah.
deep play and love all kinds. Mm-hmm. So the self-care should always be the new cool. But sometimes different generations or different age groups or different cultural or different styles, neurostyles, we've been told that we need to put others first. And there's no way we can have healthy relationships if we're not having healthy self-love and self-care. So I love that. And also I want to tell you, Paul walks the walk, because I sent him a message 12 minutes before, an email just describing what my day was like. And you were just so kind. You're like, well, if we're wrapping up our week and we need to reschedule. So that level of understanding, I really appreciate. And then I was giving myself credit, the new me, maybe 15 years ago, or even 10 years ago, wouldn't have told someone that it was like that. So just saying that to you is my new form of self-care. Yeah. I'm like, go, you know? So I think these small examples can go a long way, that people need to remember that we're all human, and that, you know, you could have a tough day, or I could. And one of my friends, I have a funny way of talking about with my friends. When you were a kid or recently, have you ever gone to those water parks where they have like lazy rivers?
Yeah.
I tell my friends, like let's say we're trying to decide, are we going to socialize after a long work week? We might say, well, I need a lazy river night, which means a self-care and staying in. So sometimes if you need to change a plan, but you really feel obligated and you don't want to hurt someone's feelings, but maybe you had such a tough week and you need to do your self-care, having a fun way of talking about it with someone, I think, kind of gives someone an easier permission to do the self-care, because some people aren't used to doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of a, in a way, a gift to be able to have that dialogue, right? Just be able to say, this is what I need and what I'm doing for myself. Even just to give the other person some perspective, like, oh, well, gosh, I didn't know you were feeling that way. Or, you know, I'm not having a great day either. And so it then brings about that, just that dialogue that's super important, because you're right. We have a tendency to keep it in, to carry ourselves in a way that looks like we've got it all handled all the time. And that's not true. It's just not true. It's just, nobody has life handled all the time.
My son said to me at the beginning of 2022, he said the funniest thing one morning when I couldn't get an electronic to work, which is like my form of a 911. He goes, Mom, you are looking like you're having a hot mess moment. And I'm like, I am having a hot mess moment. And I just love the way he called it a hot mess moment. I did a little funny show called, you know, Mom, you're having a hot mess moment, just to model to people that sometimes we look all put together on our social media, or we do these great articles or shows, but that we have the vulnerability too, where we have sad moments or stressful moments. And I think that's the way we can like form an inner peace and deal with stress of any kind. So, well, anything else, any parting words or any things you'd like to say? I'm so appreciative of you.
I think that covers it. It's just that self-care piece, and, you know, to emphasize, you know, just taking some time even after listening to today's show for those 5 minutes that you might have left in your car ride or before you transition, to acknowledge that, you know, what your style is in terms of what your self-care consists of, and is that enough for you?
Absolutely. Well, Paul, thank you so much. And can you let everyone know where they can find you?
Yes. You can find me on my website. That's www.paulsheesleylcpc.com.
Okay, great. Paul, thank you. I appreciate you. You have helped me today just by hearing your voice. So thank you for our time. And remember, everyone, sometimes there's people that just calm you down. Give them a call. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Paul.
All right. Take care.